Think big. Think positive. Never show any sign of weakness. Always go for the throat. Buy low, sell high. Fear, that's the other guy's problem. Nothing you have ever experienced can prepare you for the unbridled carnage you're about to witness. Right. Super Bowl, the World Series, they don't know what pressure is. In this building, it's either kill or be killed. Right. You make no friends in the pits and you take no prisoners. No prisoners. 1 minute, you're up half a million in soybeans, and the next, boom, your kids don't go to college and they've repossessed your Bentley. Are you with me?
Welcome to Turner's Take Podcast. I'm your host, Craig Turner, broker here at Daniels Trading, author of Turner's Take Newsletter. You can find me at Twitter at Turner's Take. You can find me on the web at turnerstake.com. I work with hedgers, speculators, online traders, broker-assisted, manage futures, and everything in between. And let's get to it. So I'm a little late here on Tuesday night. It's been a pretty eventful week. Let's start with spring wheat. We're going to talk grains tonight mostly. And I think we've been bullish on the spring wheat. I think that's going to be leaking into the other grain markets, going to be supportive of grains here. But let's first talk about spring wheat in the newsletter. I know I talked about it a couple of weeks ago when July broke through 575, saying that was a breakout higher. Kind of missed out on that, but we did end up getting into March versus May spring wheat. That had been kind of lagging behind the other bull spreads. We got around even. And as I'm talking right now, we're at 7.5 cents. So we're up about $350 per spread on that. And, you know, if this spring wheat story is for real, we're up another 15 cents in July overnight. Okay, let's back this up for a second. Monday, so spring wheat had been going up because the conditions were so poor. I think half of the United States spring wheat is in North Dakota. The spring wheat is the very high protein wheat. It's the highest protein wheat. And you got to remember about wheat is that even there's a ton of wheat of, you know, when you add up all the classes out there, it's Chicago, which is the soft winter wheat, Kansas City wheat, which is the hard red winter wheat, and then we've got the Minneapolis, which is the hard spring wheat. You know, the higher the protein, the more inelastic the supply demand curve is on this. So if you need high protein wheat, there's not a whole lot of other options you have. You know, if you need low protein wheat, you can always take some low protein wheat and maybe blend it with some higher. You average it all out, and you can use it for what you need it to be used for. But if you need that high protein, it's no substitute. Think about it a little bit like soybeans. You know, soybeans from a protein content, if someone needs that protein for feed or whatever it may be, you know, the protein content on the bean is so much higher, you know, than the corn and the wheat, feed wheat, that, you know, if you really need the soybeans, it's very hard to make up for it in other sources. And so think of spring wheat that way. You know, if soybeans, and really it's the meal can be so inelastic sometimes with the crush in the United States and the exports that the United States send out, that, you know, sometimes soybeans can really skyrocket if those stocks get tight. You know, while with something like corn and wheat, sometimes you can substitute, definitely on the feed side, you can substitute, you know, for the two a little bit easier. Well, not the case so much with beans. So with that in mind, now let's go over to wheat. And the spring wheat, the Minneapolis wheat, is like beans. If you need it you need that high protein wheat, it's hard to substitute for it. While it's a little bit easier to do, make a substitution on the Chicago wheat or the Kansas City wheat, which are lower protein wheats. So like most things, when the markets really get gangbusters like this, sometimes it's a protein story. Now, if you look at the September, what happened with spring wheat is the drought up in the northern plains is so bad that it's really hurt good to excellent ratings. And on Monday night, I mean, last week when we talked, the good to excellent ratings last week fell 7%, went from 62% good to excellent to 55% good to excellent. This week on Monday, which was yesterday, the good to excellent ratings went from 55% to 45%. Cake took another 10% hit, which is even bigger. So it really, I mean, it is just, you start doing the balance sheets on spring wheat and it's getting, and you know, the yields are looking bad and it's getting tight when we're doing our calculations, and I'll get that to in a minute. So, you know, on Monday we gapped, let's see, you know, on Monday we closed lower, which was disappointing because I was in both wheat spreads and also as long as Chicago wheat thinking be as follower, it really didn't. So that was kind of disappointing. But I'm glad I'm still in the Minneapolis wheat spread and held on to it, because when that news report came out, that spread came roaring back. I think the market closed like in July spring wheat somewhere around 950, high 590s. And then the report came out, and now we're 45 cents higher. We're about 643. So spring wheat is about, we were up about 20 cents yesterday, and then on the open today, we're up another 15 cents. And the overnight, we're up 15 cents in the overnight. This is like Sunday night openings, you know, when we have drought and corn and beans are tight. I mean, it's kind of, it's what it reminds me of right now. Now, I know a lot of people don't, you know, trade spring wheat. A lot of producers out there aren't part of it. But what it is doing is it is help lifting some of the other grain markets and help supporting it. So let's talk a little bit about wheat. And then I'm going to talk about the market structure and what it really means for corn and soybeans. So one, the first thing we're just going to briefly go over is just what this really means for spring wheat. So if you look at, so I'm going through our balance sheets here for spring wheat. And if, you know, based on the good to excellent reports, you know, we could have, I mean, we could have a yield. Oh, let's take a look here. Spring wheat. Where's bring the spring at my table here? White wheat. U.S. hard red spring wheat. Here we go. Yield of 38, 39. Last year was 46, and over the past couple of years, we have been about 46, 45. So to come down to 38, what is that percentage-wise in terms of a lot? So about a 15 to 20% reduction in crop. I mean, can you imagine if we lost 15 to 20% of the corn crop or the soybean crop? I mean, it would be going to the moon. So that's what's going on right now in spring wheat, and that's, if you look at a chart of that, you know, in the July contracts, that's what's going on. Now, what's interesting, too, about the spreads, you know, spreads within the same crop year in corn and wheat, don't, in corn and, you know, just the regular wheat, let's say Chicago wheat, don't really move too hard against each other unless we're in a delivery month and we're talking about, you know, carry or a lack of carry going into delivery and the, and just the, maybe the futures in the delivery month catching up with a very strong basis, right? I mean, we've seen that before. But otherwise, those corn and, let's say, the Chicago wheat inner, you know, same crop year spreads, you know, old crop, like May versus, like March versus May in corn or March versus May in wheat, don't gain a whole lot against each other unless it's really, really tight or, like I said, in we're past first notice day or something like that. But with beans, it definitely can, right? We've seen that in the past where beans were so tight that, you know, we can see, oh, November, you know, higher over January, and then January's high over March, and March way over May, and it just goes on and goes on. Spring wheat can get that way too. So if you look at, like, the spread that we've been moving into was the March versus May, and people are, you know, saying, like, why is this? You know, it was a carry, now we're at a 7 cent inverse, and it's because of the protein. So when you have, when you have commodities like beans and wheat that are very high demand for a protein that they can't substitute for, the old crop spreads or the same crop spreads can really outpace each other. You know, when we had the drought in Australia back in 2008, I don't know if I ever remember spring wheat going to $20, which is, I'm not saying we're going to $20, I'm saying that's an example. I mean, I think March, July went a dollar out, which is crazy. We're at, you know, a nickel or 5 cents or 7 cents right now. But, you know, basically the world ran out of spring wheat, and that's what happened in that spread. And you can have that within the same crop years in high, in basically inelastic protein markets like beans and like and like spring wheat. So that's why the way we are trading it the way we were, and we probably wouldn't make those same kind of trades in corn and some of the other wheat contracts, but definitely for those. So anyways, I'm looking at a balance sheet here with that 38, about that 38 yield we're projecting for the new crop for the U.S. hard red spring wheat. That's bringing us a carryout of about 140 million bushels. We had about 220 million, I would say, for the old crop, and the year before about 272. So all of a sudden, the stocks to usage, which were in the 30s and the 40s for the past couple of years, has now come down to 25%. So yeah, I mean, so with this, you know, this can run, and if the commercials are short, or someone has a big short position out there and needs to get out, or if they're short bought, where they've made commitments, commercials have made commitments to sell the sweet thing that they've had to, and now they have to go into the market and buy it to get delivery of it. It could really put a lot of pressure on the market. Now, I know what you're saying, why you're spending so much time on spring wheat? Well, here's the deal. It's going to be supportive of, let's say, Kansas City wheat, which I know a lot more farmers we work with and a lot more traders we work with are interested in. And you know, if we take a look at, you know, the Kansas City wheat, the Kansas City wheat was up about 15 cents today, I think. So that, you know, I mean, or maybe it was, maybe not quite 15, but it was up there. It's up another, what was Kansas City wheat today was up 12 today, and then in the overnight it's up another 4 or 5. So you know, that's a big deal. The Chicago wheat, you know, we were came in, and we closed on Monday at about like 4:31. Now we're at 4:37. We're up 16 cents since Monday. So, you know, the spring wheat's up almost 50 cents since then, and it's, you know, putting a bid into Kansas City and into Chicago. And what that is doing, because of the protein and the feed differential, that's helping out corn. This corn story is not, I mean, there weather is a concern out there, but December corn at 401 right now, I think we're probably closer to 390, 395 if we don't have this wheat story going on. Now, you might say, well, spring wheat's up 45, you know, the other wheats are up, you know, 15 to 20, corn's only up 5. Well, you know, it's a nickel higher than we would have had anyways. So, you know, thank you very much, Mr. Wheat, for at least bringing, you know, at least putting in a bid into the corn. Now we start getting some weather issues, you know, up north. You know, we're having, you know, the weather issues for wheat. There's concern now there's going to be weather issues for corn up there too. You talk to farmers in the Midwest, and I talk to a lot of farmers, and whether it's Eastern Corn Belt, Western Corn Belt, Northern Plains, there's a lot of problems all over the country. Now it's nothing like huge where it's groundbreaking, but you know, the USDA is using a average trend line yield now of like 170 and change, and from just our conversation as of what's going on out there and what farmers are thinking, I'm looking at other analysts, I'm thinking we're probably 3 percentage points off what trend line is. And then if you take that, and I also think, you know, when we see the acres, we're going to lose a little bit of corn acres too, just in the next report. So when I do my balance sheet now for corn, I'm not at 2.1 billion carryout anymore. I'm actually closer to 1.7 right now. We're somewhere in my book, we're somewhere between 1.7 and 1.8 billion carryout for old crop. You know, if that's the case, that you know, the if that's the case, then you know, somewhere between $3.80 and $4 seems okay to me for a harvest price. Now we start getting other weather issues. We start getting a weather market. The things don't get better in June across the country. You know, what happens if we go to a 165 yield? You know, maybe we lose another couple hundred on the supply and demand, and all of a sudden we're at 1.5 billion. And you know, all of a sudden that's a it's not burdensome. It is not too much corn now. It's not tight, but it's adequate. I mean, 1.5 billion is more in, you know, in the you look at different zones, over 2 billion, you know, on the grains, and it gets heavy, you know, when you get the 2 billion corn stocks. If you're a billion or lower, that's really tight. You know, that's $5 corn or higher. But that 1 billion to 2 billion, you know, there's a range of how, you know, somewhere between very tight and too much. And that 1.5 is probably, in my book, that's, you know, that 1.4 to 1.6 range, the market kind of treats that as adequate, corn stocks. So we keep on, you know, if we go down to a 165 yield, I think we're in the adequate zone. And all of a sudden, you know, $4 to $4.50, $4, $4.25, $4.50 corn kind of becomes more of the norm in that zone. You know, as soon as we get to the $2 billion and over on the carryout, that's when we're really talking about prices below $4. So I think we could be making a shift here. Now, the thing is, this rally in corn and beans, there are some signs to say, well, it's not for real. It's really supported more by what's going on in wheat. And I always look to the spread market to see, is this a real rally for this actual commodity? Because sometimes you can get rallies in commodities because of the dollar. Dollar drops, commodities go higher. You look at the spreads. If the spreads don't change, then it's not a really... See, if the spreads don't change bullishly, then it's not a demand driver, a supply and demand driver. It's an outside market driver. So let's say, you know, corn goes up 20 cents because the Fed shocks everyone and the dollar collapses and corn's up 20 cents and you look at the spreads and it hasn't moved. Like they all went up together. Well, or, you know, it's up a quarter of a penny or something like that. That just tells you that the market's repricing because of currency, the supply-demand structure hasn't changed. You can't get too excited about that move because it's a one-time deal because of something happened in the outside market, right? So same thing with same thing with wheat right here. Wheat is going through the roof. The spring wheat is the story. Because of the protein differentials and just the pricing between all the different commodities, corn and beans have to come up. I look at the spreads and I see, well, are the spreads going any higher? You know, July versus November beans, we've been at -6 cents, -7, -5 during all the strength in soybeans. And in corn, if I look at Dece versus Dece, we're at -15. We really haven't moved a whole lot in Dece versus Dece. If you look at SEP versus March, which I've been talking about bear spreading, you know, we've been in a 20, 18, and 19 cent carry. Even during some of the rally when we got to $4, the spread was backing off and going lower, which tells me that unfortunately, at the moment, the corn and the soybean move has everything to do with wheat and the market repricing protein, you know, and what's going on more in the wheat market rather than any kind of supply and demand driver. Now, if the corn spreads really do start moving higher, which I'm not too super bullish on, or the soybean spreads moving higher, which, again, I'm not super bullish on right now, you know, then I can get really excited about corn and soybeans. But until that happens, I'm still a bit more neutral on it. I would love, if we do get weather issues, this is what I'm keeping an eye on. July versus November beans, Nov 17 versus Nov 18 beans. They are in very distinct downtrends. If we break those trend lines, then all of a sudden I know not, you know, we got something's going on. So probably most likely wouldn't be so much demand. It'd be supply this time of year. So if there was a real issue out in the country and traders and farmers and the market was worried about supply coming down, we would see those spreads move. So someone might want to play, let's say, July versus Nov on a stop on a breakout higher. Same with like Dece corn. You'd probably, you know, it's probably how you'd look to kind of play that. And if I am bear spread, you know, corn like SEP versus March, maybe I have a stop buy stop in Dece, you know, way up above the breakout point to kind of, you know, kind of hedge myself if, you know, if there really are corn problems. And that's probably something I'll take a look into. But that's how I know if the move is for real. So it's, even if you don't trade future spreads, it's really really important to understand what they're telling you, because they can give you some of the best clues to what's happening supply and demand wise in the market at any given time. So that is and those are really my thoughts in the grains here. I've just talked 18 minutes about this and feels like it just started. But that is what's going on in the grain market. So we're going to be, just to recap, we're going to be dictated basically by spring wheat. So keep an eye on the spring Minneapolis wheat. July and September are probably the 2 months you have to really pay attention to. Turner's Take newsletter is actually trading the March versus May spread. So you can keep an eye on that. I would think if this story continues, you know, seeing, you know, spring wheat up 15, Kansas City wheat maybe up 4 or 5, Chicago wheat up 2, you know, up 2. That's the kind of movement you'll see, because you can't really substitute the Kansas City and the Chicago for the Minneapolis. But what you could do is, if you don't have enough Minneapolis wheat, you could blend it with some of the higher quality Kansas City wheat and get by, maybe. So maybe that puts that, and that's why probably Kansas City outperforms Chicago here, I would think. Because Kansas City over Chicago now is almost 15 cents. And that could really be more just about the spring wheat. So that's interesting. Bean oil looks like it could, again, what's interesting about take a look at a chart of July or August bean oil. You know, looks like there's again a defined downtrend on the daily chart. I'd be looking for a breakout. I mean, if we are going to get a summer weather rally, then you know, and beans are really made in August, so there's still time to get a weather rally in the bean market. So I would look at some of these things to see if we can break out to the upside. It would be, you know, beans are still in its downtrend, even though we're up. What is November beans doing? 941. Still hasn't broken out of that downtrend. If we have real weather issues, maybe we will, but right now we're not seeing it. So still, I think we're still range bound in corn and beans, and it's really the spring wheat. And that is that. I'm not going to talk too much about. I'm not going to get into energies or the meats today. I do get some questions sometimes when I talk to people on the phone about why we cover the markets that we do. And just to give you a little insight into that, you know, we cover, or I cover the grains primarily. And then if you are a student of the corn and soybean markets, what that leads to you covering and actually knowing quite well is, one, on the livestock side, hogs and livestock. Because so much of the feed in the grain, you know, because feed's a big component in livestock, and so much of the feed has to do with the major grain markets. So there's a huge link in there. So once, you know, once you really start to get to understand the grain markets, it just leads to you following the livestock a lot, because they're so interlocked and related. And then the other side, it's a big energy component, you know, part of pricing, or there used to be, there still is. For the grain market. So with corn and soybeans, you've got ethanol and biodiesel, and that leads you to, you know, there are links between natural gas and crude oil and gasoline in there. So if you, so one of the reasons why we follow those markets so much, or those kind of three, is because they're all related. And if you're following corn and soybeans and the levels that we do, you have to really understand and know what's going on in livestock and the energy markets. That's how it works. I also talk about the macro markets from time to time. And that's because, you know, the macro markets, like the dollar, what's going on in the economy, just gives you an idea, you know, economic growth of kind of your main starting points, your main themes, you know, for following the markets and what you're expecting. So that's how it all works. That's how I write my newsletter. That's how I do the podcast. So hope everyone enjoyed this one. I know it got deep into some of the grains here, but that's what I've been writing about. Those are a lot of our positions. I want to be bullish on corn and beans. I need to see the term structure for the spreads to start getting bullish before I can get really bullish corn and beans. It's setting up. There's potential. The weather keeps on getting worse, and these yields keep on coming down. We could see some tightening of the balance sheet. I went over corn. For soybeans, unfortunately, I still have our yield at 48, and I'm still seeing us somewhere between a 450 and 500 million carryout for a new crop. But you know what? You go down to 46, 45 on the yield, which is a lot. So a lot to lose 2 to 3 million, two to three bushels on soybeans. But you know, if you did that, then 2 to 3 bushels, that's like 200. That's 160 to 240. That'd be 90. So 90, 180 to 270 loss in bushels, you know, instead of 450 to 500, maybe we're in the 200s now on the carryout. So yeah, I mean, you can see how if you do have weather problems, it could put a bit into beans, but you know, that's a lot of bushels to lose. 2 to 3 bushels is a lot for soybeans, unless you get like some real serious drought. So we will see what goes on there. Stay tuned. All right, have a great rest of the week. I'll talk to you on Thursday. And if you need anything, you can contact me. Again, name's Craig Turner. You can find me at turnerstake.com. You can find me at Twitter. which is at Turner's Take, and you can always find me on the Mules Trading website. All right, good luck, happy trading.
This material is conveyed as a solicitation for entering into a derivatives transaction. This material has been prepared by a Daniels trading broker who provides research market commentary and trade recommendations as part of his or her solicitation for accounts and solicitation for trades. Daniels Trading, its principals, brokers, and employees may trade in derivatives for their own accounts or for the accounts of others. Due to various factors such as risk tolerance, margin requirements, trading objectives, short-term versus long-term strategies, technical versus fundamental market analysis, and other factors, such trading may result in the initiation or liquidation of positions that are different from or contrary to the opinions and recommendations contained therein. Past performance is not necessarily indicative of future performance. The risk of loss in trading futures contracts or commodity options can be substantial, and therefore, investors should understand the risks involved in taking leveraged positions and must assume responsibility for the risks associated with such investments and for their results. You should carefully consider whether such trading is suitable for you in light of your circumstances and financial resources. You should read the risk disclosure accessed at www.danielstrading.com. Daniels Trading is not affiliated with, nor does it endorse any trading system, newsletter, or similar service. Daniels Trading does not guarantee or verify any performance claims made by such systems or services.